talk about the history of Israel from a maybe different point of view than we have normally discussed it. And of course, the things that I'm going to say were the examples and the people that are involved in this history. They're well known to us, but I want to attack this visually. When we encounter names and places in the Bible, we go to the back of our Bible and we look at the maps there, and frankly, the maps in my Bible, as in yours, are pathetic for trying to figure out who did what and where he was and so on and so forth. So today we want to talk about the, we want to begin to survey, all right, we want to begin a survey of the history of ancient Israel. We want to start with Abraham, as we're doing today, and going right up to the present era in terms of who did what, where they did it, and you'll see. We want to understand the flow of events. We want to understand the geography, the geology, the climate, how the climate has affected what happened. And the, believe it or not, the climate has had an effect on history. To understand the chronology, who did what, when, and very importantly, where. Because we don't have a good sense, I believe, of where this stuff all happened and who moved where and who did what from what point. And I want us to understand geographically what happened. So we're going to look at a lot of maps. I've got a wonderful Bible program. It's called Logos. I have a library that has 1,400 books in it. A lot of the books contain maps. There's an atlas in Logos that I can use to copy maps, detailed maps of exactly what I want to focus in on. And all the years that men have struggled to give graphic presentations, and now through the wonders of PowerPoint and wonderful projectors like this, when a man has an image that he wants to display for the first time in history, he can do it right. So I'm taking advantage of that. Now, let's look at, this is the world of the Bible. And this is the ancient world. You see ancient kingdoms here. You see that? Yeah. Nineveh and Babylon, and here's Jerusalem. All right, I want to show you. There's a region called the Fertile Crescent. We've all heard of the Fertile Crescent, right? Respond to me. Let me know I'm not up here just talking. Yes. We've heard of the Fertile Crescent. Does anybody remember where the Fertile Crescent is? Well, here's the Fertile Crescent. It's the crescent shape of the two rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates, which sweep around like that. Okay, that's the Fertile Crescent. That's where mankind thinks that civilization originated, and maybe they're correct. And so that's the Fertile Crescent. And there's another area that we want to consider, and that's called the Levant. And this is the Levant, this area here. All right, right around in there. See, that's called the Levant. All right, so we can focus in on that. Levant. So here you see it, pardon my drawing skills, but that's generally called the Levant, and this is the Fertile Crescent. So these are important areas for understanding the geography, the geographic history of the ancient world. Now, get this focused in your mind. This is what that area looks like today. All right, today we have pointer back. Today we have Turkey. All right. Now Turkey is plays an important part. The country that's called Turkey today plays an important part in history. All right, you see this little bay right here? This little bay up at the top of the Mediterranean where Turkey meets, what is it now? It's Syria. That's called the Bay of Skenderun. Now, I want you to fix this in your mind just because it's in terms of latitude, it's if you draw a line of latitude across here, you get the boundary of modern Turkey, but it's an important biblical area too in the history of Abraham. So you've got Turkey here, and you've got Iraq and Iran, and over here is the Persian Gulf, and this area is important in the life of Abraham. So here's Israel today, this tiny little sliver of land that everybody covets and everybody is making war over. Here's Syria today, Jordan today, and this is Saudi Arabia down here. This is the modern world overlaid over the geography that we're going to be talking about. So kind of keep that in your mind. So let's talk about the geography of the Levant. The Levant is the term that's used to describe the land bridge that links Asia, Africa, and Europe. And we want to understand the geography, the geology, the climate, and the people of the Levant. So this area called the Levant is about 9,500 square miles. It's the size of Vermont. It's a tiny little place. And God said that he would make Israel a burden for all nations, and it certainly has been a burden. It's only 150 miles from the top of Israel to your map there, the map that you have. It's about 150 miles top to bottom, and it's about 75 miles east to west. So you might want to, you can write on this map, you can draw on it, you can write names on it. How many of those do we have left over, Justin? A bunch. So bring this map back with you the next time I speak, first Sabbath in April. We're going to continue. But you can draw on it, you can write on it, you can make notes, you can circle things, and you should. You should do that. It's a land bridge, the meeting place of continents and nations, and it's also a battlefield. There are four regions in the Levant. So here's a map of, this is a copy of the map that you've got. Now, I think that's not focused well. Can you focus this thing, Brad? I think it could be focused a little better. I don't know how this control works. If you can do that, I would be grateful. So there are four areas in the Levant. Okay, if you could just focus it while I'm speaking, that'd be great. First of all, there's a coastal plain. There's a coastal plain. This is, of course, the Mediterranean Sea. Here's the Dead Sea, just to give you the general idea of where things are. I always think of Jerusalem being east or west of the top of the Dead Sea. So on your map, you see Salem. Where it says Salem, that's now Jerusalem. So that's over here someplace. So the first area that we want to talk about is a coastal plain. It's a plain, it's flat, no mountains, no ridges. It's like any other coastal plain. I want to point out that there's a river here. You can see that on your map. And this is called the Brook of Egypt sometimes. I think on the map it's called Besor. All right, so that's in the coastal plain. And this is what you call today, it's called Gaza, the Gaza Strip. And this was the domain of the Philistines thousands of years ago. All right. So you got a coastal plain, and then you have central highlands here. Now, Jerusalem is up high. You know, it says that someone would go up to Jerusalem. And they would go up to Jerusalem, not because it was north, but because in terms of altitude, Jerusalem was up on a mountain, up on a hill. So you've got in the Levant, you've got a central highland. Then you've got, on the other side of that, you've got the Jordan River Valley. Here's the Jordan River. It goes from the Sea of Galilee in the north to the Dead Sea in the south. This is a geological fault. There's a fault line here, similar to the fault line that Route Interstate 81 is built on. every time I drive up on that road, I think I need to be checked for a concussion afterwards. It's kind of like after mile 42. Anyway, there's a geological fault here. You can see that perhaps the earth spread in two directions, leaving a valley, because you've got the Jordan River Valley here, and this area of hills over here is called the Transjordanian Highland. So four separate regions make up the Levant. You've got the coastal plain, the central highlands, the Rift Valley, which contains the Jordan River, and the Dead Sea, and then the Transjordanian hill country. So this rift here is not only a geographical, but it's a cultural and a national boundary, as well as being a geological boundary. So this is just a picture of the Jordan River Valley in the north. It's very lush, a lot of rain up there. We'll take a look at a rainfall map. And at the bottom, down near the Dead Sea, it looks quite different. This is the Jordan River Valley in the south, down by the Dead Sea. So it goes from a very lush place with a lot of rain to a desert. So let's talk about the climate. There are no large rivers on the Levant, no large rivers. So the inhabitants of the Levant depend on rainfall for their survival. They have hot, dry summers and periodic winter rain. They have little rain from May to mid-October. They had the early rains that would come in October, and the latter rains came in March and April in the spring around the holy day season. So Hosea talks about he will come like the rain, like the latter and the former rain to the earth. So there were periods of rain in Egypt. In Israel, and of course the people depended on this rain. And we can look and see what the rainfall looked like. This up here, this very dark green area, this is up near Mount Hermon. They get about 50 inches of rain a year, and of course it gets, as you go down toward the desert, toward the Dead Sea, there's less and less rain. We get about 42 inches of rain in this territory. So this is very, very fertile up here. Down here you've got desert. The yellow, this indicates the minimum rainfall that will support agriculture. This is about 10 to 12 inches a year. You need 12 inches of rain per year minimum to support agriculture. So up in the north, you have Mount Hermon. It rains a lot up in Mount Hermon. The rains drain off that mountain and into the Jordan River Valley to feed the Jordan River, and the Jordan River flows with no other outlet except into the Dead Sea, of course. The Dead Sea, this is actually a pretty picture of the water of the Dead Sea. Most pictures of the Dead Sea that I've seen, the water is very murky, cloudy. It's full of minerals. It's just completely saturated with minerals. You can see how the salt has crystallized and accumulated on the beach. Yeah, I think that's as good as it's going to get. So the Dead Sea is the lowest point on Earth. It's more than 1,400 feet below sea level. And of course, it's fed by the Jordan River, as you can see on your maps. The Dead Sea itself is 50 miles long. If you look on your maps, you look at the distance there that you see, that's 50 miles, and it's 8 miles wide. And it's also incredibly deep. It has places that are almost 1,000 feet deep. And the Dead Sea is 50 times saltier than the ocean. And at the south end of the Dead Sea, they experience only about 4 inches of rain per year. So the Dead Sea area is not where you want to raise crops. You won't have any, there's no grass to support livestock. Down the banks of the Jordan River, it's not a place you want to live. Now let's talk about the people of the Levant. We heard during the scripture reading, we heard about the people in the land that God was going to dispossess, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Amorites. When Abraham came into the land, it was populated by all these people. Now let's turn over and look at the genealogy on the back page of your handout. And you can mark down Genesis 15, 19 for a complete list of the people. But here we can see the people who inhabited the land when Abraham came into it. And I'm going to refer to him throughout the presentation as Abraham. I know his name was changed from Abram to Abraham, but I can hardly ever get that right. So I'm just going to call him Abraham throughout the presentation. So the people who lived in the land when Abraham came into it, they were all the descendants of Ham through Canaan. See Canaan here? So if you look down from Canaan, you can see a couple people, but the tribes, the Jebusites, Girgashites, Amorites, Hivites, all these people were descendants of Ham through Canaan. That's, of course, why the land was called Canaanite. Over on the other side of the chart, you can see Egypt. You can write in there Mizraim. You won't see Egypt in the genealogies if you look it up. Egypt is another name for Ham's son, Mizraim. So Egypt, of course, or Mizraim, founded the nation of Egypt. And if we go over a little farther to Cush, we can see the son of Cush is Nimrod, and we all know him and know all about him. So I just wanted you to see that the land that Abraham came into was populated by all the people who were descended from Ham and Canaan. And here's what the map of the racial breakdown of the land looks like. Up here, we have the Jebusites, the people who have descended from Japheth, and they're inhabiting this land up here. All the green are people who have descended from Ham, and the yellow are those who have descended from Shem. And of course, Abraham descended from Shem, and he came from this yellow region. Now, if we're going to talk about the geography of things, we need to talk just for a minute about Egypt, because Abraham got entangled with Egypt. Egypt is apparently Earth's most ancient kingdom. At the time of Abraham, it was the richest and most stable. It was stable partly because of the rich riches of the Nile River, which flooded its banks every spring and made the ground fertile, very, very fertile indeed. And a third century historian named Manetho constructed a list of kings. Josephus said that Manetho's information was influenced by myth and legend, but Manetho constructed a king list which goes all the way back to 3000 BC, with no mention of a hiatus caused by a flood. The flood, I figure, if the Bible chronologies are right and if God intended us to take them as exactly as they are presented, the flood occurred around 23. It was in the 24th century BC, somewhere around 2320 BC is when the flood occurred. Manetho's chronology, of course, says nothing about that. So I guess I'll believe the Bible rather than a third century Egyptian historian who depended on myth and legend. So the boundaries of Egypt, the boundary that we're most concerned with is it was bounded on the north by the Mediterranean Sea, of course. But the demarcation between Israel, the land that God gave to Israel, and to Egypt is that little line on your map down here at the corner. You can see a little a river that goes this way, and it's called Besor. So that was when God talked to Abraham and told him he was giving him some land, that was the river of Egypt that God referred to, this brook of Besor. Can you see it on your map? Okay. So that's in Genesis 15, verse 18. God's telling Abraham what the boundaries of his territory will be. And the river of Egypt, you might think it was the Nile, but no, it's this, it's apparently this river right about here called the Brook of Besor. So in Genesis 15, 18, that's the river that's referred to. So we're going to talk about Abraham's exploits for the rest of the sermon. And I don't know how long it'll take. I usually speak from notes, not from a PowerPoint. So I guess at a convenient point, I'll stop. So Ray, when we get to an hour and 20 minutes, would you give me the high sign and let me... No, I'll stop before that. No. So let's talk about Abraham's exploits. Abraham's family came from a city called Ur. Let's see now. Genesis 11:27. These are the generations of Terah. Terah, and you can follow on the back of your, you can look at the genealogy of Abraham on the back of your handout. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father, Terah, in the land of his nativity, in Ur of the Chaldees. So Haran is not a part of this story at all. He fathered Lot, but Lot became an orphan. And Abraham adopted him and took him under his wing. So everywhere Abraham goes, Lot goes up to a point. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarah, or Sarai, who's also his half-sister, remember. And the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah. But Sarah was barren and had no child, and Terah took Abraham, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarah, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram, his wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees. Now listen, what was their final destination? What was the point they were aiming at? They were aiming to go to the land of Canaan, it says. So although they didn't get there directly, that's where they were going. They were going from Ur to Canaan. So we'll look at a map and we'll see where they went. And they came to Haran. Now Haran's a very important place in the story of Abraham, and I never knew where Haran was until I started doing this. I kind of had this vague idea of Abraham going to Haran and then coming to down to Canaan, but I never knew where Haran was. And people keep going back to Haran throughout the story of Abraham and his descendants. People keep going back there, and I had no idea until I looked at the maps where Haran was and dwelt there. So they left Ur and they were headed for Canaan, but they went to Haran and they stayed there for a while. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now it says in Acts that Abraham didn't leave Haran until his father was dead. So they left from Ur and they went to Haran. Now let's look at this. This is the trip that they made. You see Ur way down here in near Babylon someplace. Take note that it's on this side of the Euphrates River. It's on the same side of the Euphrates River as Israel is. It's on the southern shore of the Euphrates River. So many people look at the map and say, okay, Abraham's father took the family from Ur up here to Haran. Well, there's a fly in the ointment. The pointer right now is over top of another city that's called Ur. It's called Ur of the Chaldees. This is called Ur, and according to the map I'm going to show you next, this is Ur of the Chaldees, right here where the pointer is. So either Abraham's family came all the way up here and made a detour to go north to Haran, or, and I'm not advocating either view, you know, I'll present the information you decide, like Fox News. Here's another city called Ur of the Chaldees, and according to this plan, Abraham's family would have gone this far in order to go down here, but stopped. So, stopped in Haran. Here's another map that shows the two possibilities. You can see clearly that Ur is on this side of the Euphrates River, and you can see here clearly that the Euphrates goes this way, and that this Ur over here is on the other side from the point of view of Israel. This is on the other side of the Euphrates River. Now, according, if Lot and his family, or Terah and his family came from this direction, they got here, and instead of continuing, they made a jog north and took a detour to get to Haran, where they stayed for quite a long time. Or if Ur was over here, they came to Haran intending to go down this route and stop. So you decide. The mileage from the southern Ur, the mileage from here to here, is 958 miles to get down to the area of Jerusalem. This is 958 miles, almost 1,000 miles. And this is from here to here. This is 635 miles. So Joshua 24, verse 2, Joshua is recapping the history of his people, and he says, "Thus says the Lord of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond Euphrates." Well, geographically, from here to here, you haven't got to Euphrates yet. It's not beyond Euphrates. But from here to here, you cross the Euphrates here and up here. This city is beyond Euphrates, this Ur. This Ur is not. Make up your own mind. I'm just giving you the information. So the southern Ur, this Ur down here, where we traditionally believe Abraham came from, it's not beyond Euphrates. This Ur is. If they came from this direction, somehow, for some reason, they went 50 or 60 miles north and settled here for several decades before Abraham left and took a part of his family down here. So there's both points of view, you decide. Let's look at Abraham's family tree. This is important. It's important to know Abraham and Terah's family tree in order to understand the life of Abraham and his descendants. So you can see I've put yellow highlight around several people. On this level, all the people in yellow stayed in Haran. Remember that Terah's family went, they were aiming to go to Canaan, and they went to Haran, and they stayed there for a while. Well, Abraham and Lot left. Here's Abraham's family. Here's Lot's family. They left, and they came down into Canaan. But all the people who are circled in yellow here, they stayed. They stayed in Haran. Here's what that looks like on a map. Here's Haran up here. So all the people who weren't in yellow highlight left Haran at God's command when God told him to leave Haran and go to a land that he would show him. Abraham was here in Haran, and he brought Lot and his bunch down by this route, and they settled in the land that God was talking about. But all the other people, let's look at that again, or you can look on your map. All these people stayed in Haran, and that's important. That's important to the family of Israel, or the family of Abraham. So Abraham and Lot left Haran. Abraham, Sarah, Lot, Lot's wife, they settle in Canaan. Lot's father, of course, Haran, had died decades earlier. He never made any of the trip. He died in Ur. Lot's father died in Ur. Abraham apparently adopted him. They subsequently moved to a mountain east of Bethel. You can find Bethel on your map. Let's look at the map again. Bethel's over here. So Abraham began to drift around a little within the confines of the land of Israel. He lived a kind of a semi-nomadic life. Genesis 12:9 says he moved south. Well, they started out here in Bethel, and they moved south. And then a drought hit, and Genesis 12, verse 10, tells how Abraham took his family from Bethel down here to Egypt. And PowerPoint covered it up, but PowerPoint says their destination was a city right there where the pointer is, called Memphis. So Abraham took the family to Egypt. We know the story of what Abraham did in Egypt. He kind of threw his wife under the bus. He let her go into the harem of Pharaoh. Pretty risky. God protected her, of course. One commentary accuses Abraham of cowardice in this matter. So we know what the story was. Abraham got kicked out of Egypt, and he went back to Bethel. Find Bethel on your map again. He lived between Bethel and Hai. So he lived near Bethel. So where is that? So while living near Bethel, here it is up here. Here's Bethel. It's a little higher than the Dead Sea. You can find it on your map there. That's Bethel. So while they're living in Bethel, we know about the conflict that occurred between Lot's herdsmen and Abraham's herdsmen, and says that they were too big for the country. In order to avoid any conflict, any tension in the family, to be a bad example to the indigenous people who were living in the land, Abraham must have taken Lot up to a mountain here and said, look, Abraham had the right to choose whatever part of the land he wanted, didn't he? By virtue of what the promises that God had made to him, by virtue of the fact that he was, in essence, Lot's father now, Abraham could have demanded his rights, but he didn't. And in order to avoid conflict, I'll never forget the sermon that I heard. A guy named Victor Root gave this sermon. He said, in order to be Christians and in order to avoid conflict, we can't always demand our rights. And I thought that was a very important message. And Abraham here did not demand his rights. So Lot could have had anything that he wanted. And so he looked to this area, and this is the area that he chose. This is a plain. This is the plain of Jericho. You see that's Jericho there. The city of Jericho is someplace here between the Jordan River and these central highlands. Jericho is in the Rift Valley. So Lot chose the plain of Jericho because it was, it says it was well watered. But because of Lot's later entanglement with the people of Sodom, it appears that Sodom might have been in the same area. Now, traditional sources say Sodom is down here on the shores of the Dead Sea, where it's a desert, and there's no plain there. It's the mountains come right down to the sea. We'll look at that in a second. It gets no rain. That you can't support agriculture there. You can't raise cattle there. You can't raise anything for cattle to eat way down there. And my point is that Lot moved towards Sodom, it says in the account. And so I believe that Sodom is up here in the plain someplace on the north shores of the Dead Sea. They still get rain there. Let's look, let's read the scripture. Genesis 13:10. Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan. So this is what he saw, the plain of Jordan here. The plain through which the Jordan River runs, that rift valley that we talked about, and that it was well watered. It wasn't watered by rain, it was watered by the rivers in it. It was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So again, the reference to Sodom and Gomorrah with respect to the plain. It was well watered before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Like the Garden of God in the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan. Lot chose the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east. And you might remember I talked about how journeying east is like journeying away from the presence of the Lord. I mentioned that in several sermons. And that's symbolic here. Lot moving away from the presence, the blessings, the influence of God as he moves east. East in the Bible is sometimes a code for moving away from God. Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. So he's talking about being in the plain and Sodom in the same breath. Sodom is not way down here on the shores of the Dead Sea. Sodom is up here in this plain somewhere. So Abraham, after they separated, Abraham moved south to Hebron, Mamre, and he built an altar there. So that's just a detail of what Abraham did. Abraham moved to I want to be sure I get this right. Yeah, Abraham moved to Hebron, Mamre. Hebron, if you look on your map, I think Hebron and Mamre are the same thing. Hebron and Mamre are two names for the same place. So here's a picture of the rainfall situation. This is where Lot moved. And you can see that there's not a lot of rain there, but it's well watered because of the Jordan River. And we looked at pictures of the Jordan River up in this region and the Jordan River down in this region. And this is getting pretty arid down here. This is a lot of desert. So this was well watered because of the rivers. You can see some other rivers going through here, various places that feed into the Jordan River. So here's what Lot chose. Lot chose this part here. All right, sorry about that. Sometimes technology lets you down. Lot chose this part, right here. So my contention is that Sodom and Gomorrah must have been someplace near the north shore of the Dead Sea. So what happened at Hebron? Genesis 16, while Abraham is living in Hebron, Abraham begets through Hagar Ishmael. God gives Abraham the covenant of circumcision. All the males in his house, including Ishmael, are circumcised. Genesis 18, it's while Abraham is in Hebron or Mamre. Remember, he was sitting under a tree in Mamre when God visited him. and God told him about his blessings, and then God told him he was going to go and destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham negotiated with God. That happened while Abraham was in Hebron. So Abraham fathered Ishmael. Ishmael became an archer, Genesis 21:20. Just a side note about Ishmael, it says he became an archer. And when my kids lived with us, we'd read the Bible out loud every day. And my son was reading the scripture, and it suddenly popped in my mind. I hadn't thought about this before. Jacob, in Genesis 49, predicted that Joseph would be troubled by archers. Genesis 49:22, Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches ran over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. That pretty well describes what the descendants of Ishmael have done to us, have felt about us. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd of Israel, the stone of Israel. So just a side note about Hagar and Ishmael, the archer. So in Genesis 13, God gives Abraham a land grant. It's all the area that's shaded. And God expands on this land grant later, Genesis 15. Genesis 13, verse 14 to 16. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had departed from him, "Lift up your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward." And it's easy to think that perhaps God has taken Abraham to one of the mountains in the central highlands. "For the land which you see I give to you and your descendants forever, and I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants could also be numbered." So it's at this point when Lot is living somewhere near Sodom, somewhere in the plain of Jordan, that four kings invaded Canaan. Five kings in Canaan are vassal states to Elam. Now, I never knew where Elam was until I looked at this map. You see Elam? Elam is way over here on the Persian Gulf. So apparently the king of Elam, who is Chedorlaomer, has made all these states are vassal states to him, and they paid tribute to him. But they rebelled against him, it says in the account, and he came and made war with them. Now, one of the neat things about Logos is you can measure distances, and the distance from here to these other kings, these other kingdoms that Chedorlaomer had paying tribute to him, it's about 1,000 miles. It's about 1,000 miles from here to there. So he invaded, of course, he invaded Canaan and sacked Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot was living in or near Sodom, and all of his possessions, all the possessions of the people of the land were taken as booty, and the people were taken prisoner, and Lot was among them. So this war breaks out, and Abraham hears that his nephew has been taken prisoner. So just to give you an idea about the resources and the moxie of Abraham, Abraham pursues and defeats these Mesopotamian kings. Let's do this time. All right, he goes from, apparently, I think the kings came in this direction. They attacked the cities here and went north, and Abraham begins to follow them. So Abraham goes from Mamre, past Jerusalem, past Shechem, up to Hazor. This is up past the Sea of Galilee, and he crosses the Jordan River here, and he goes all the way over here, and this is where, in this area, from Hazor to Hobath, this is where he defeats the kings in two stages. He divided his forces against them. You know, this guy has a 315 man army. Trained, he says they were trained men, and he armed them. Now, even if he armed them with hoes and pitchforks, that's quite a bit of hardware to have. And he had 315 trained men. Were they bodyguards? Were they a private army? Was Abraham an ancient warlord who was normally a good guy, but if you roused him, he could be a real badass? You know, he's kind of think of somebody like the guy in the Die Hard movies, like, you know, Bruce Willis. You think of Abraham being like Bruce Willis. He's a mild-mannered guy unless you cross him or his family, and then if you do, watch out. So he goes. He's a strategist. He divides his army and he attacks from two different directions. He's kind of like Robert E. Lee. He has the skills of a general that were shared by Robert E. Lee. So Abraham attacks these four kings at night and he defeats them and he recovers all his goods. He recovers his nephew, Lot, and all the other people. So when we think about Abraham, we can't just think of an itinerant Bedouin farmer and goat herder. He's got moxie, he's got know-how, he's got resources. And on the way back, of course, as you see, you know the story, so I'm not going into the scriptures. I'm just kind of trying to provide some background information to the information in the scriptures. So on the way back, of course, it says he meets Melchizedek, who is the name Melchizedek means the king of righteousness. King of righteousness. What man on earth deserves that title? The king of righteousness or the king of peace? And in Hebrews 7, we learn that Melchizedek is without father, without mother, without descent, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. He's like the Son of God. Like the Son of God. Now, obviously, this Melchizedek has immortality. Only God has immortality. Melchizedek is not a man. Melchizedek is, in fact, the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. And this is the same individual in a different role, the role of a priest here. Same individual that met Abraham in the door of his tent when he was living in Mamre. Melchizedek is the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. And we had a potluck here and it's many years ago, and there was one of the people here was kind of a messianic, of the messianic point of view, and said to me, you know, I think I know who Melchizedek is. And I said, who? And she said, well, Melchizedek is Shem. I said, well, it couldn't be Shem. Shem has a father. Shem has a mother. Shem is not without descent, and Shem did have a beginning, and he did have end of life. So it couldn't be Shem, but she hadn't read the scriptures in the New Testament that reveal to us the nature of Melchizedek. So Melchizedek was the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. So after the defeat of the kings, Abraham goes back to Mamre, and Lot went back to Sodom, of course. And in Genesis 15, God promises him an heir. He had already promised him to have descendants like the dust of the earth. And that's, you know, that's one level of descendants. But now in Genesis 15, he promises promises Abraham that he would have descendants like in multitude the stars of heaven. So I see a kind of a duality in these promises. He was the father of many nations. You look at your genealogy on the back, you can see all the nations that sprang from Abraham. But he's also called the father of the faithful. So I see, to me it says, dust of the earth, father of many nations. Like the stars of heaven, father of the faithful. So God makes his covenant with Abraham, and he makes a greater land grant. Now, before God had said, you're going to inherit all the all the land that you can see. And now he says you're going to inherit all the land from the river of Egypt, and most of the commentaries say it's the brook of Besor, it's the river of Egypt, to the Euphrates, he says. So here's Abraham in Hebron. This is where he looks up, sitting in the door of his tent in the shade of a tree, and he looks up and he sees three men. It's God and two angels. This is where, in Hebron, this is where Abraham intercedes for Sodom, and he negotiates with God. And I think one of the lessons we can take from this is that the will of God is not ironclad on every subject, and that God's mind can be changed, and that God's will has some give and take in it, and that when we pray to God, we can try to change God's mind. So, of course, Abraham gets God down to 10. If God can find 10 righteous individuals in Sodom, he won't destroy the place. Unfortunately, Sodom didn't make the quota. The next day, Abraham looked towards Sodom and Gomorrah and all the land of the plain. There's another indication that it's not down, way down on the southeastern shores of the Dead Sea. Sodom and Gomorrah are in the plain, the same plain that Lot wanted. Looked towards Sodom, Gomorrah, all the lands of the plain, and saw and behold the smoke of the land which went up like the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain, not of the coast of the Dead Sea, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. So after this, after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Abraham moves from Hebron, almost due east, to Gerar. Now, this is what is known today as Gaza. Gaza, over here on the coast. And at that time, this was the realm of the Philistines. You remember how much trouble David and Saul had with the Philistines. Well, this is where the Philistines lived, over here on the coast. And this is about 35 miles. It's the realm of a king named Abimelech. So Abraham moves from here to here, and he's afraid again that he'll be killed on account of his wife. So he pulls the old she's my sister trick again. And this is just after God has promised to make Sarah fertile. Just after God promises Sarah is going to have a son, Sarah ends up in the harem of this other king called Abimelech. There's something insidious about this if you think about it. Abraham has to be the father of Sarah's child, not Abimelech. So God takes steps. And Abraham does it again. He does the same thing wrong again. So, I won't read it for the sake of time. I see Ray's finger getting itchy. Abraham gets a warning from God, or Abimelech gets a warning from God in a dream to let Sarah go. So he does. So then Abraham lives for a long time in this place over near. Over near the coast, over in the area of the Philistines. On your map, Gerar and Beersheba. So Beersheba. While he's in Philistia, Isaac is born. Hagar and Ishmael are sent away. And Abraham makes a covenant with Abimelech. Abimelech can see this guy, this warlord. He's apparently mostly benevolent, but Abimelech looks out at Abraham, and every year he's richer. Every year his flocks and herds have increased. Every year he's got more servants, more trained men in his army. Abimelech wants to make a covenant, a kind of a non-aggression treaty with Abraham. And it's not the kind of covenant that Chedorlaomer would have had with the kings of Canaan. This is a covenant between equals. Abraham is not paying any kind of tribute. He just has to promise not to be aggressive with respect to Abimelech. This is a covenant between equals. Abraham had the standing of a king. Abraham was a king in the land, and it was recognized, and his power and his influence kept growing year by year. And Abimelech appreciated that and didn't want this man to become a trap or a snare for him. So Abraham, of course, after Abraham cuts a covenant with Abimelech, and you can read about that on your own. And it's at this point where, while they're living in Gerar and Beersheba, and you can find that on your map, that Abraham has to take Isaac to the mountains of Moriah and sacrifice him there. So Abraham and Isaac travel from Gerar to Moriah. It's about 50 miles. It's like Gerar to Jerusalem today. It says here it's a 3 days journey. And Abraham was seemingly not in a hurry to get there. I guess I wouldn't be either. So here's what it looks like. The journey from Beersheba. From Beersheba to Moriah. This is the route that they had to take, and we all know what Abraham did there, earned God's respect and God's blessing, and afterward he returned here to Beersheba. Now, Sarah, there's only one woman in the Bible whose age is given. Only one. In all the Bible, we only know the age of one woman, and that's Sarah. And we know she was 127 when she died. I didn't understand this until I read the account, but when Sarah died, she was up here in Hebron, and Abraham was down here in Beersheba. So it was kind of a jolt to me to discover that Abraham and Sarah were in different places when she died. Maybe Abraham had such vast holdings that he had to spend time in Hebron and some other time in Beersheba. But when Sarah died, Abraham was down here in Beersheba and had to travel up here to Hebron. Sorry, I'm getting confused with the names. He had to travel up there to make burial arrangements. So we know the story. He brought a cave up here in this region from a man named Ephron, who was a Hittite. And that cave ended up being the final resting place for many people in his family. In Genesis 49, Jacob is about ready to die. Genesis 49:29, and then he, Jacob, charged them and said to them, "I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that's in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that's in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And Jacob says, there I buried Leah." So there is the list of people who are buried in the cave here in the field of Machpelah. So then let's flip over and look at the genealogy of Abraham. After Sarah's death, Abraham sends for a wife for Isaac. Isaac was 40 when he got married. Abraham doesn't want Isaac to marry into any of the tribes of Canaan or the Philistines or the Hittites. So he sends his servant back to his country. And you can see where his country is. It's back up here. I think this now says Nahor. Haran, Paran, Adam, these are all names for the same place, the place where the people in the middle of your genealogy stayed and never came into Canaan with Abraham and Lot. So there's still family back here. And Abraham wants his son Isaac to marry somebody in the family, somebody in the line of Shem, somebody who's not a, doesn't worship pagan gods. So he sends a servant. This distance from here to here, as the crow flies, it's 450 miles. I measured it with Logos. 450 miles, and of course that doesn't include this dog leg in this one either. So it's 450 miles airtime from here to here. Abraham says that God will guide him and provide a wife. Now, you remember Jeff Foxworthy, and look at your genealogy. Jeff Foxworthy said, you remember, you might be a redneck if. He might be a redneck if your family tree doesn't have any forks in it. I don't know. Abraham wants somebody in the family to marry Isaac. He's a warlord and a wealthy man and a king and a redneck. Abraham makes his servant swear a solemn oath. The servant goes up here and finds Rebekah, and he promises Rebekah the moon should be the mother of bazillions, and her descendants will own the gates of their enemies, and it sounds good to Rebekah, so she comes back with him and marries Isaac, of course. So Abraham's final acts. After the death of Sarah, look at your genealogy out there to the left side. You see that Abraham marries Keturah, and he has six more sons by Keturah. This is after he's 137 years old. He has six more sons. He sent them away to what's now Saudi Arabia. So he sent them away to these countries, this area, these six sons, because he didn't want any conflict between these six sons and Isaac and his descendants. Well, he should have sent them farther away. If you look at the sons of Keturah, you can see at least one name, one tribe that became an adversary, a competitor with Israel. Who sees it? The time of the judges, this tribe was contesting with Israel for the land, the Midianites. See Midian? All right, so that does it for this one. Next time we're going to talk about the legacy of Abraham, the blessings of Abraham. We're going to discuss Isaac and Jacob and his 12 sons. And I hope to be able to cover the Exodus, because it'll be the next Sabbath that I speak to you is just before or just in the days of unleavened bread. Okay, so that's that. Thank you very much for your attention. I hope this has been helpful.